The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the May-June issue of Scout Life. And we're going to begin on page 12, Get in the Jamboree Spirit. The big event provides a scouting experience like no other. We have pictures here. Looking like all the men and women are coming into the area. Looks like it shows some pictures from way back when. But we'll start. There's nothing quite like it. Thousands of scouts from around the country in one place, making new friends, showing off scouting skills, and having so much fun, they'll remember that week and a half for the rest of their lives. It's the National Jamboree. The largest gathering of scouts in the United States returns this July at the Summit Bechtel Reserve in West Virginia. It will be an adventure for everyone who attends. What's a jamboree? To celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Boy Scouts of America, the BSA planned a big gathering in Washington, D.C. in 1935. President Franklin D. Roosevelt hoped every registered troop in every council would send a scout to have every nook and cranny of our nation represented in the jamboree. But a polio outbreak forced the cancellation of the inaugural event. 2 years later, the president saw more than 25,000 scouts set up tents in the shadow of the Washington Monument. The boys went sightseeing, listened to speeches, and swapped trinkets they had brought from home. Scouts met again in 1950, and the gathering was even bigger. Over the years, the National Jamboree had been held in different places around the United States before settling in the wooded wilderness of West Virginia. Typically, the event happens every 4 years. But the last one was canceled because of COVID. Going forward, since the summit began hosting the Jamboree, scouts have enjoyed all the exciting activities available there. You can go mountain biking, water rafting, zip lining, rock climbing, and skateboarding. You can tackle challenges courses and go on canopy tours. You can try stand-up paddleboarding, archery, and BMX. Almost any fun high adventure activity you can imagine is available at the summit. But since it's a jamboree, there's more. This year, scouts will enjoy entertainment at Lakeside Extravaganzas. They can also take part in Summit Apex, a new outpost program hosted by the Order of the Arrow. Scouts can learn to become better leaders in their unit, community, nation, and world through a new jamboree program called Leadership Heights. Participants will hear from special speakers, try activities that enhance leadership and communication skills, and face challenges that help them reflect on being a better leader and team player. More than 40 merit badges will be offered, including fly fishing, mining and society, and robotics. Just like at the first jamboree, scouts can enjoy swapping with fellow scouts. Trading patches has become a popular pastime, and some scouts bring custom-made council emblems for the jamboree. You can add the coolest patches to your collection during the week and a half. Fundraising for the future. Attending the jamboree can be pricey, but it's worth every penny. Paying for the big event requires preparation, salesmanship, and a disciplined approach to saving. Get ready for the next jamboree by following these steps. Check with your unit to see if you can use money you raise from unit fundraisers. If so, participate in as many unit fundraisers as you can. Camp cars, popcorn, or whatever your unit sells. Also, check with your council for any fundraising events you can take part in. Save cash from jobs you do throughout the year. You can also save money you receive for birthdays and holidays. Get ready. Not going to this year's National Jamboree? You can still follow the fun from home by logging on to go.scoutlife.org/jamboree. Start thinking about attending the next jamboree. Scouts often call in one of the defining experiences of their time in scouting. Check back at jamboree.scouting.org for updates on registering for the next jamboree. Now let's see what's going on in some of our pictures here. On page 12, at the top, conquer the rapids on the New River by going whitewater rafting. On the right, you never know what cool patch you can come home with when you trade. Bottom of page 12, you can join a game of Gaga Ball at pits all over the summit. Have adult supervision when you play. Top of page 13, you can race at the tracks, a dirt BMX course where you can catch some air off the hills. And bottom, the climbing, this is on the left of page 15, the climbing walls offer challenges for many skill levels. This year's event, what? The 20th Annual National Jamboree, when? July 19th through 28th, 2023. Where? Summit Backdoor Reserve, Glen Jean, West Virginia. Connect online over the air. You connect with scouts around the world every year via Jamboree on the Air and Jamboree on the Internet. Every October, scouts in more than 170 countries communicate with each other online or by ham radio. The events provide opportunities for fun activities and talking with other scouts. And participation can fulfill requirements for Cub Scout Adventures, the Citizenship in the World Merit Badge, and the International Spirit Award. Around the world, scouts meet not only on a national scale, but also on a global one. Since 1920, scouts from around the globe have come together for the World Scout Jamboree. This year will be held August 1st through 12th in Semangan, South Korea. Like the BSA Jamboree, the World Jamboree is a time for fellowship and fun. You can meet scouts from more than 100 countries, learning about their cultures and how scouting makes an impact in their home countries. The next World Scout Jamboree will be in Poland in 2027. It isn't the only scout gathering that happens in other countries. The World Scout Moot invites young people ages 18 to 25 for a week and a half of high adventure activities. The next one will be in Portugal in 2025. Continuing with this year's event, who? BSA members, venturers, explorers, and Sea Scouts are invited. Merch. go.scoutlife.org/merch. Theme. Forward. And, like skateboarding, visit the park, the Summit X Games Quality Skate Park. Scout Live Gear Guy Update. I can see clearly now. Sunglasses can look cool, but first they should protect your eyes. If you brought your last pair of sunglasses in a convenience store and got them from free somewhere, they're probably fun to wear, but they might not be protecting your eyes. Glare reflecting off snow, sand, water, and even the sidewalk can burn your eyeballs and impact your vision. It's worth spending a few extra bucks to get sunglasses that block ultraviolet light, fit your face, and have the right lenses for the activities you like to do. Block the sun. Good sunglasses make it easier to see in bright conditions while reducing the risk of eye damage. They should protect you from two kinds of ultraviolet, UV light, UVB, and UVA rays. UVB rays, which cause sunburn, can also burn your eyes. Even in winter, UVB rays can burn you when you've reflected off the snow. UVA rays are radiation from the sun. Their effect might be less noticeable after a day after the beach, but over time, UVA rays can cause serious eye problems. Before you buy sunglasses, make sure the pair you like blocks both kinds of rays. Frame for your face. The sunglass frame size should match your face size, and the lenses should fully cover your eyes. The arm should be snug enough to your head so your shades don't slip down or fall when you're wearing them, if you're doing good sports or speed sports. Like biking or skiing, glasses that wrap around your head provide more coverage, stopping sunlight from sneaking around the sides and making your eyes water. More coverage will also help your peripheral vision, too. through the looking glass. For many activities, polycarbonate lenses are the most affordable. They're scratch-resistant, and if you drop them, they won't shatter and potentially cut you. Polarized lenses substantially reduce glare. So polarized, if you be on the water, be aware they're not great for driving or reading LCD screens. Mirror lenses are a good alternative. Photochronic lenses automatically adjust to changing light. They're great for basically every activity except driving. They can also be pricey. Interchangeable lenses of different colors allow you to choose your tint and polarization on demand. Note that sunglasses cannot provide the same protection as safety glasses. Switch to the appropriate pair when you're working with tools or certain materials, administering first aid or participating in activities like shooting sports. Less tint is also used specific. Choose blue for water activities. Dark colors, including brown, gray, and green, are best for everyday use and outdoor activities. Darker lenses cut glare and reduce eye strain in moderate to bright conditions, like on snow. Light colors, yellow, gold, amber, and rose, excel in moderate and low light and are best for sports like skiing and snowboarding. Light colors also improve depth perception, and they can make it easier to see in flat light. If you have your heart set on a pair of pricey shades, keep an eye out for models being discontinued, holiday sales, and discounts on your first purchase, which is common on manufacturer websites. The Gore Nuclear NAR and Goodor I Do My Own Stunts. Sunglasses are great for small to average-sized faces. They wrap around for extra protection for cycling, Nordic skiing, and more. Both have polarized anti-fog lenses. Blender's Crystal Orb shades have a chill vibe. They're great for sunny days on the water, chucking a flying disc, or just hanging out. The polarized blue and purple mirrored lenses provide 100% UV protection. Tyfosi Strikeout are some of the most affordable UVA/UVB blocking shades you can buy, and they have glare-reducing lenses. Choose from four shatterproof options. Find your gear here. Guy Gear makes finding information online a snap. Just visit go.scoutlive.org/gearguy for links to all the gear shown here. Really, really lost in space, pages 18 and 19. The wildest part of Alien space station vacation? Babysitting his little sister. I was ready to have the best time of my life in space, checking out the music and social clubs, until I heard the word that I dreaded most at 14. Alien, Mom said, look after your little sister. We're going shopping. The space station vacation, the largest in the Klang Galaxy with 50 exotic locations and over 100 amusement rides, with the largest, with the latest technology, was the dream of every kid on the planet Zargo. It was my family's first trip here. Meet us in 30 minutinks at the Nauseon Pool, my dad said. Don't be late or lose her again, or you'll spend the rest of the vacation in the room. So unfair. My 9-year-old sister, P. East, was worse than the Ragu meteor shower. It destroyed anything in its path, too. She's a ball of energy with no listening skills. Keeping an eye on her was like tracking the microscope bit bug. It disappeared in a blink, too. My summer vacation, as dead as the Nucro moon, I seized P. East's hand and tugged her over to the Teen Cosmos Club to get a cold drink, watch the dances, and keep an eye on her. No, P. said, pulling. I want to do the space launches. You know, I really hate those type of rides. I never really have any fun because of you. Dragging her to a booth, we sat. This is really, really boring, P. said, mimicking me. Ignoring her, I looked around. A cute girl signaled me. I blushed, squeezing through the twirl of dancers. I was about to say something cooler than the Boomerang Nebula when another girl came over and joined her. She had been gesturing her friend to her friend, not me. Oops. P. Feeling as dumb as a meteorite, I stumbled back to the booth. P. East was gone. I glimpsed her slipping out the front door. "Come back," I said, running after her. She disappeared into the mass of tourists. "This can't be happening." I jostled into the sea of bodies. At least I knew where she was headed. I popped out of the crushing horde in time to see P.E. climb into the interstellar zipper, the fastest hovercraft in the universe. Our parents had bought her the virtually every ride package scanned onto our foreheads and a guaranteed front-of-the-line pass. I ran through the scanner, beeped, and hopped onto the ride. As I took off, there was a nanosentry. I thought I'd left my head behind. Things in places blurred, my face flattened, and a long string of drool looked suspended in the air. I almost caught her, but Beast, a little girl with a lot of nerve, splashed into a pool of shrieking swimmers and then bounded back onto ground and decelerated as space launchers land. Trying the same stunt maneuver, I sank into the pool. I clambered out and, drenched to my bones, squished to the launchers. P.E.'s blasted off. No way I was going doing that ride. I lose my last 10 launches. Wait until the little criminal got back. I'd throw her in jail. Red lights flashed, an alarm rang, and a panicked voice cried out over the comm. The last launcher malfunctioned. It just hurled into the space. I need to save my sister. I pushed the ride operative out on my way. Gasping, I jumped into another launcher and buckled in, imagining spending the rest of my life locked in my room. How can I catch her? Follow location device on the screen, the operator said, and shut the door. Prepare for the wildest flight of your life, space cadets, a corny commander voice said over speakers inside. The caution sign above the controls read, "If you have a bad heart, do not ride. Real space flight action, my heart went bad just reading it." In an arc second, I took off at warp speed into space, rumbling in my seat. A blip on the monitor showed P.E.'s ship. I clutched the steering control and rocketed after her. But what could I do when I caught up? "Command control here," a voice said. "When you get close enough, push the red button and the net will discharge." "Will do," I said. The ship was easy to handle, and I was actually having fun for the first time on my vacation. This was better than a game simulator. I had her launcher in my sights, flew nearer, and pressed the button. The net sprang out and covered my sister's ship. "Gotcha." "Ease up," said Command Control, "or we'll lose you both in the asteroid belt." My heart exploding like a supernova, I pulled back on the stick, but it was too late. "Look out!" Plantoids struck our launchers, throwing us off course. Our rockets blew out clouds of fire and smoke, and our ships spurred farther into outer space at light speed. We traveled 3 parsecs on the display. "Really, really, lost in space now." "What do I do?" I shouted, and I was in another galaxy on my own. "P.S., can you hear me?" "Ready, you, Alien," my sister answered. "Isn't this just jet cool?" The asteroids must have knocked her head silly. There was nothing jet cool about this. Then a monitor flashed an alert. "If we don't get out of this tailspin, it says we're going to crash onto that chartered planet," I shouted. "No problem. Deploy your robot. I'll do the same." "Robot?" I pulled down a lever marked robot assistance. A panel opened behind me and out stepped an android 10 mingles high. "Danger, danger," the robot warned. "No kidding. Was that all it did? Can you save us?" The robot wrapped his arms around me and a protective shield surrounded us. A laser shot from its eyes and cut a hole in the side of the ship. Then it leaped out, zooming through space faster than thought. My sister's robot flew beside us, and when we slowed, we were back at the space launchers. The robots landed and let us go. There was applause from the spectators. I waved, feeling heroic. "Congratulations," the riot operator said. "You've completed your mission." "What mission?" I said. "You should fix those things before someone gets killed." The operator laughed. "You're really into the game, aren't you?" "What do you mean?" P.E. took my hand. "That was all a part of the attraction. None of that was real." "Oh," I said in a small voice. "Knew that. Just acting." I looked at the time. Only one many things left to get to the Nogan pool. We'll never make it. Pete pointed across the launchers. It's right there. Yeah, do that too. Let's go meet Mom and Dad. Our parents were sunning around the pool. How'd it go? Mom asked. Did you get to have fun? Didn't get lost, did you? Dad said. Not in the least, I said. Pete is one jet cool little sister. Then we changed into our swimsuits and jumped into the pool. Really, really lost in playing. High flyers. Scout walked through the history of combat aviation and then take off. Max Kennedy looked out the windshield, but instead of an open road, he faced puffy clouds and a whirling propeller. The 14-year-old first-class scout was flying more than 1,500 feet above the ground inside a Cessna 172 Skyline airplane. He could see an amusement park below. The roller coasters looked like they came out of a model kit. Cars on the highway seemed like toys, but this flight was a little different from a commercial airliner. It was definitely bumpier since it's smaller craft, he says. An aerial tour capped off a camp-out tour which Troop 94 of Yorktown, Virginia, learned about the fascinating history and science of combat flight. Flying through the years. People long wanted to fly and soon saw warfare advantages to taking to the skies. In ancient China, kites were used to measure distances to help armies strategize how to attack forces. In the 1890s, scouting founder Robert Baden Powell's brother Baden designed man-lifting kites that would help spy on the enemy. Airplanes were invented in 1903, and a little more than a decade later in World War I, the air was part of the battlefield. In World War II, the United States produced nearly 300,000 warplanes. Some of the aircraft from both world wars are showcased at the Military Aviation Museum in Virginia Beach, Virginia. The troops set up camp at a city park last year and headed to the museum to check out the more than 50 planes housed there. They saw small biplanes, exotic, iconic fighters, and B-25 bombers. They even got to sit in a Beechcraft T-34 training plane. It's pretty amazing we got to see that and get a hands-on experience, says Griff Mahan, 15, a life scout. As you progress from your wood frame to material, the scouts notice not only changes in design and technology, but they are supposed to use to dominate the sky, says Scout Elliot Hardman, age 11. When the scouts studied the changes in light, one thing that remained consistent was the science. Learning to soar. The Aviation Merit Badge teaches the disciples of flight and how a plane meets those disciples of weight, lift, weight, thrust, and drag. The guys handled the museum's flight simulators and constructed paper airplanes, experimenting with different designs to make their planes soar farther. I feel we learned a lot more because it wasn't all up on a whiteboard, says Derek Kennedy, 12, a second-class scout. The following day, they saw those flight principles in action from the air. Flying in an aircraft is a fun option for completing the Aviation Merit Badge. Before an orientation flight, adult scout leaders must complete the BSA's flying plan checklist, which includes your patient permission and getting all the documentation on the plane and pilot. The troop met with pilots at the Newport News Williamsburg International Airport. They piled into Cessna and took turns flying. The 15-minute flight took the scouts in a big loop over the area, and it's one of those most fun experiences you'll ever have, Derek says. Pictures at the top. Alex Dover looks at a North American T-28D Trojan in the museum's World War II aircraft hangar. Jackson Barrier Evan, Jake Inkler, Elliot Hardiman, and James Mitchell. Follow the test. Review the light plan in the Cessna with adult leader Dan Murray. And continue at the bottom of the page 23. Sue New, Duenas, and Jacob Morris look at a 105-year-old Curtiss JN-40 Jenny biplane. Water sports. Water skiing is awesome, but you have to be prepared to take a few spills before you master the art of standing on your skis while flying across the water. Start by practicing on dry ground. Number one, with your skis flat on the ground, beneath you and your feet in the sky, sky boots, sit with your knees against your chest holding onto the line. As the instructor puts the line forward, use your legs to lift up slowly, keeping your feet flat and your arms and back straight. And three, stop before you reach a standing position, keeping your legs slightly bent. When the instructor stops pulling the line, you should remain standing. If you wobble either way, it means you were leaning too far forward or backward. Woodwork. With the right tools, a good woodworker or carpenter can make just about anything from a supply of wood. Measuring tools can be a folding rule, tape measure, or for the small jobs, a common yardstick or a 12-inch ruler. Squares are used for making and checking right angles, usually for corners and edges. Cutting for tools, including a rip saw, for cutting in the directions of the grain, a cross saw for cutting across the grain. Screwdrivers may have a flat tip or a cross shape, also called a Phillips screwdriver. And finally, hammers are available in many styles and sizes. A claw hammer with a forked curve and almost head of about 10 ounces is a safe choice. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.